Okay, hi everyone. This is another episode of The War Room. I'm Mohad Samet of Through a Court, today with Matthew Goldman of Vertical Finance. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Okay, so today we are going to hear about an oh shit moment that you had, not with Vertical Finance, with the previous company. So tell us a little bit about you. Tell us about the company. Tell us about Vertical Finance if you want, and let's start talking about it.
Yeah, so I've been in payments and fintech for about 15 years. Got my start at Green Dot Corporation here in LA before they were a bank, which has led me on this whole adventure. Today, a lot of
smart people came out of Green Dot. A lot of interesting companies.
Very high turnover. I think two people I worked with are still there all these years later. But yes. Mm-hmm. You know, the progenitor of Chime and everything. So my current company, Vertical Finance, briefly, early stage startup, we are focused on building rewards programs. We have a rewards API, as well as we run our own rewards program on top of a rewards credit card for wine mm-hmm. enthusiasts. I started a company a couple of years ago after ultimately double exit with my last startup, which was called Wallaby Financial, which I started in 2012. And Wallaby was originally what we were trying to do was build an over-the-top wallet, like what Curve does today, although we mm-hmm. could never get the networks to allow us to do so. And so ultimately we built an app that helped consumers understand how to best use their credit cards. So you could tell us what cards you had in your wallet and what you cared about, whether it was optimizing rewards or minimizing fees or maximizing for your cash flow. Mm-hmm. And at the point of sale, we would make a real-time recommendation, intelligence, you know, kind of an advisor as opposed to a budgeting tool. And then as part of that as well, we built a tool that would say, hey, based on your wallet and how you spend money, here's a recommendation for what new credit card that you should add to your wallet that would really be the ideal answer for you.
Right. A little bit ahead of your time.
Yes, maybe. I mean, it was a good app. It worked well. We had a lot of users, but yes, a little early. A lot of the tools that exist today would have been very helpful. Yeah.
Okay. So the company struggled a little bit. Eventually you guys sold to Bankrate. That was a nice deal announced in 2014.
Yes. So that was, it's one of those funny things when you build a company, you build a great product, you're very proud of it. And then sometimes you don't have a ton of users. When we had built our recommendation tool for a new credit card to get, which we called Wallet Boost, after it didn't, take off like wildfire, the app was still doing pretty well. We started calling up other companies in the space that sold credit cards, and we called the Bankrate guys who we knew who operate creditcards.com and the Points Guy and a bunch of other credit card sites and said, hey, maybe we can do a partnership. And then the whole thing actually started as a kind of software as a service component. We operated our platform for them. They didn't really have like logged in tools and things. So you could log in, we gave them a mobile app, we white labeled everything we had for creditcards.com and the Points Guy. And that led pretty rapidly to them investing in us, which was exciting. Like all of a sudden the head of strategy from this public company shows up to one of our regular meetings. Like, well, this is going to be interesting. And they said they'd love to invest. So we're like, great. It was probably the coolest investment round you could ask for, because they're like, well, we just want to have a seat at the table. They gave us money on like an uncapped note. So you're like, okay, whatever, that's going to be good. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was it. And we were actually gearing up, to raise another round after we closed that. And then it had been like 40, 45 days. And they called me up and they said, hey, we'd actually like to buy it. And I was like, what changed? And they were like, well, we had a big corporate retreat. We have this new CEO who came in last year, and we told him about the investment. And he said, if you guys like it so much, you should just buy it. And we were like,
new CEO, new M&A, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Always. And so my co-founder and I were like, well, they're our biggest customer. We should, entertain the option. Like, let's come up with a number that seems sort of unreasonable for where we are, given that they're like the major source of our revenue. And mm-hmm. if we can get there, then yeah, we'll say yes, right? Like, I think we're at that point where everyone's feeling a little worn out. Yeah. And we talked to some of our investors and we're like, hey, is anyone going to write us, a big round? just right now to make us not have this conversation. And unfortunately, no one said no, or maybe fortunately. So we're like, we'll go negotiate this deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you negotiate, and the deal is going along. So let's talk about that big oh shit moment. What happened? How did you find out about it?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So it was summer of 2014. Kind of in June, we went back and forth on the term sheet. We came to an agreement. You know, we signed this term sheet. And for people who haven't done M&A before, one major component of those is a no shop. So once you sign that, you can't raise money anymore. So I actually like reached out and canceled some VC meetings that I had set up for pitches. And then all the lawyers get to work. So this we signed this deal in this letter in July. And then in the second week of August or so, my attorney calls me and he says, "Hey, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but they've put their pencils down." I remember that phrase he used. And I was like, "What exactly does that mean?"
Out of the blue?
Yeah, out of the blue. And I'm like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "It's very clear to us that their attorneys have been told not to work on this deal anymore because they should be responding to our questions. And they're just not. Like, it was just in process. You know, the term sheet lays a lot of things out. And they're a big public company. So they've got this big fancy law firm and there's a lot of, you know, documents." And I'm like, that's odd and not good. So I call, you know, the business counterpart and I'm like, "What's going on?" They're like, "Oh, you know, it's coming along. Just give us some time. We need some time." And meanwhile, I'm starting to run low on cash, right?
Yeah.
I had been planning to raise money. I'm still spending money. I've got to pay salaries.
How many are you at this point?
There are only 9 of us.
Okay.
So not too big. You know, we're probably, you know, certainly burning like less than $100,000 a month. I mean, a small company. We'd only ever raised a couple $1 million for the company.
Yeah, but you need money to run. There are none people. You want to make payroll.
Yeah, all that good stuff. So we're like, we're going to run out of money in, you know, a few months at this point. Mm-hmm. And we spent money on doing the deal, right? And all this other stuff.
Right.
And then nothing happens. And like another week of just like total silence. And you're just like, did I make the world's worst decision here? We've got this no shop that goes for about another month at this point. So we can't call anyone else and look for another deal. That's against the rules. We're running out of money and the people we're selling the company to won't tell us anything. And there's like no news. And then the news breaks and it turns out that there's a giant accounting scandal at Bankrate.
Well, so how long between that phone call from the lawyer and finding out about Sid's scandal?
It was probably about a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you do during that week? Do you not, like, you don't sleep? You
definitely didn't sleep.
Okay.
Definitely didn't sleep. I mean, I was very depressed. I mostly sat around with my co-founder and we discussed what went wrong and what we could possibly think of doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel like you're stuck in stasis, right? It's like it was almost out of your control. And then you're trying to put a face on to the team. And we're so small, we operate pretty transparently. So we told everyone knew there was a deal going on, right? Like it's only 9 people. And then you're trying to keep everyone engaged because, you know, having that team stick together is important for the deal. And you don't want to share the stress with everyone else, right? So it was a really rough time. But then I think it actually got worse when we found out the reason. It was somewhat better because it was like, oh, maybe it's not about us, but it was somewhat worse because it's like, if they have a giant accounting scandal, then maybe they can't buy us. Maybe this thing's just going to stop.
And this is public information, right? Someone went to jail over there?
Yes. This is public information. The SEC put out a press release. We're investigating Bankrate. The stock plummets, right? It goes from like, I don't know, $26 a share to like 8 or 9 or something at the time. And it was like a very classic, like they were moving expenses from one quarter to the other to manage their earnings.
Got it.
But you don't know all the details at this point. And everyone thinks it's some big misunderstanding at this point. And like, you know, they're saying that the CFO and all these guys in finance, you know, are under investigation. And like, I met the guy, right? I'm about to sell my company to them. He seemed perfectly nice. And you're like, what is this company? And it was so shocking. It was like, you know, had a big private equity backer. So you think like everything's going to be on the up and up, right? So in the end, what we learn, like, you know, after the deal closes and a year later and all that other stuff is that this guy really did do it, right? He's in jail now. I think he's still there. He gets convicted. Some of the other VPs in finance, you know, plead and like do settlements or whatever, do plea deals. And I heard a lot of war stories from my new coworkers post-deal who were like, I got pulled in. Like, I never want to be investigated. I got pulled into Washington. I had to testify to these investigators about what I did. Because, you know, like, the CFO yelling at the regular accounting people you might work with, you know, in a regular company being like, hey, you know, rebook this. And they're like, well, you told me to, so okay. So it's quite terrible. On the plus side, we got our, you know, our RSUs after they bought us at a really good share price, and it eventually went back up. So I try to look on the positive.
I mean, always, right? You're a founder. So you're in a race against the clock. You're running out of money. You're nine people. Deal stalled. You realized there's an SEC investigation. What's next?
So we were trying to think of what we could possibly do to force them to close the deal, right? At this point, we're like committed to it for better or worse. And so it's mid-August, and we're waiting for this no shop to expire, which I think is like September 15th or something. And we didn't originally hire an investment banker. We looked at it. We interviewed a bunch of people. And this deal, like, I mean, this is also public information. It's a $10 million equity value for the company, not including all the like earnouts and stuff for the team. And at $10 million, it's really hard to hire a banker. It's really expensive. You know, they charge whatever, 6-8%. Folks like fintech partners don't want to do your deal at that size, obviously. So we don't have a banker, and like, I've never been a banker, and we're up against, you know, this weird situation plus people who do this for a living. So I decide maybe we need to hire a banker. Like, even though we don't have any, you know, we're running low on money. So I called one of the bankers we had interviewed and said, hey, can you help us with this? It should close, but it can't. Here's, you know, here's some of the stuff that's going on. It's in the news. Like, how can you help us? And we agreed to a, you know, a much lower fee, but we had to hand him $25,000 to get started, which is like, you know, a meaningful chunk for a company our size.
Yeah.
And then obviously a success payment. And that was, you know, a great move. And I sort of think like, maybe I should have hired a banker up front. And that would have been like, these guys do know what they're doing, right? They do this for a living. And we came up with this plan, which is like, how do we just scare Bankrate into action? What's going to cause them to, you know, say, hey, we really need to get this done. So we built a plan so that as soon as the no shop expired, we could do something to let them know that we're not just waiting on them. Because like, again, nothing's going on. And they're saying, just wait, just wait, just wait. And we don't really want to expose all the details of how terrible our cash situation is getting, because that's, you know, going to reduce our negotiating power. Yep. You know, they can always come back and say, never mind, we're going to pay you half as much now. So we come up with a list of potential companies to go talk to. And, you know, it's all the usual suspects, right? Like Intuit and others that are really big that, you know, everyone knows buy fintech companies left and right, you know, startups. And our banker basically gets, you know, them to agree to have a conversation with us. So then we have to sign an NDA. And then we have to, part of our, you know, agreement in the sales process is we have to disclose any new legal agreements that we make. Mm-hmm. So we sign this NDA, and then as soon as you know, the no shop expires, we sign it, and then we just pop it into the document room, and we're like, FYI, we updated the document room. There's a new NDA with Intuit. And they're like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, the no shop is technically over, and you guys haven't done anything for a month. And then they were like, no, we do want to do this deal. It's just this SEC thing. We can get this done. And then, you know, the process restarts. And it just like, it was super ballsy, I think, because they could have been like, yeah, you know, forget it. Like, you guys want to sell yourselves to Intuit. That's fine. We can't deal with this right now. We're really busy.
Yeah, but you actually forced them into action.
You had to. And I think also once you decide to sell your company, you're in a tough spot because you can't go back to like a VC and be like, never mind, I want to raise more money now. So you're like, no, you're got one foot out the door. You're not committed. So it's like, once you make that decision, you really paint yourself into a corner. If it works out, it's great. And people make money and they're happy and everything else. But you're, you know, you vastly narrow your options at that point.
Yeah. So that's really cool. So kind of snatching victory. I don't know, you know, actually they weren't walking away, but you actually got them to do something in the middle of a bunch of other issues that they've had. And basically close the victory and an acquisition, which is awesome.
I think it did feel like we were about to be defeated for sure. And I think I've seen talking, and I'm sure you have as well, talking to other founders, like there's many people who have tried to sell their companies and just never quite came together, right? Who had term sheets, who had the discussions. It wasn't just, you know, out like a vague idea. Like actually closing a sale for your company is extremely hard, especially if there's like real, you know, real money being exchanged, whether it's big or small. Yeah. So we definitely thought, I mean, at that point when we had that oh shit moment, we were like, this is not going to happen. Like we were just all sitting there being like, and this is the car I'm going to buy, or like, I'm going to buy a house or whatever. And that's like, nope, never mind. Got over our skis.
And you didn't know that the NDA was going to change anything.
Yes, exactly.
But it was real. I mean, you were not faking it. That's something.
It was real. I don't know that Intuit was going to buy us, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was a real document.
Yes. Yeah. I would not, I would definitely not, you know, lie. I heard this on, you know, your conversation with Matt Harris. Like, I think you have to be authentic, and you have to, you know, there's a fine art to deal making, but you can't outright lie, for sure. You shouldn't. Yeah. So
no.
It was real. It was enough. And it ended up working out, and we got the deal signed, very quickly after that, beginning of October. And then because they were having all this junk go on, they were like, we don't want to close till January, because we don't want to tell Wall Street in this fiscal year or whatever. And you just have, we'll fund your operations. They're going to give us another like loan basically that they would forgive to themselves or something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you just have to not violate any of your representations, like getting hacked. Like, well, hopefully we won't get hacked. Right. It was like right. Every day. And then the funny part about it was then in October, I went to a meeting with them. They're like, actually, let's close like on December 1st. Can you close in like 30 days? And we're like, obviously we want to close in 30 days. So then we turned the scramble back on, you know, had to work all through that Thanksgiving weekend, but managed to actually get everything totally closed on December 1st, and no one hacked us, and everyone had a happy ending.
Yeah. So it's an awesome story, and thanks for sharing it. And what's, looking back, you had that crazy call, you had the week of anxiety until you started getting into action, until you figured out what was going on, some more time until you actually managed to turn that around. What's any advice for anyone who's in the middle of this type of a crisis, maybe not around selling a company, but just not knowing what the future is like? What's your advice for them?
Yeah, I think my advice is to ask for help from experienced people. I regretted not having a banker or a coach or someone who I could, you know, really go to other than my investors and say like, this is a bizarre situation. How do I deal with this? Or what's mm-hmm. the right play? And we figured that out, and we did hire someone, but I think we could have been better prepared or avoided some of the heartache. I don't know, maybe not, by already having someone on the team. And so I think if you're going into a big deal, you can obviously bring in a banker. And if you're, you know, if you're not, maybe you need a coach or an outside advisor who can really do that. We just didn't have that person. We were definitely a little cocky, and we're like, oh, we can just do this ourselves and save the money. And
we almost did.
We almost did. But, you know, I think in retrospect, that would be like, ask for more help. So, yeah.
Right on. Well, Matthew Goldman, the Vertical Financer, previously of Wallaby Card, thank you so much for sharing your oh shit moment with us today. It's been great. And thank you for everyone listening to this little experiment of ours, the War Room, talking to successful founders and executives of great companies and their oh shit moments and how they recovered from them. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.